Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 10 of The Grand Cast. Today is September the 1st, Rabbit, 2017. My guest this late afternoon, early evening is Liz Hatfield. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement and goals for the show.
Great.
The mission statement being that the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. Then I have two goals, the first being to post one new episode weekly, which was Mr. Paul Brand this week.
Nice. Good guy.
Yeah. I'm very excited to listen to that one. Second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content. And I'm just going to check that off right now, because before we started recording, I told you about GIMP.
I'm thrilled to know about GIMP. I wasn't expecting to learn something that useful today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And my day was made better by seeing your cool graphic design artwork you have on your wall.
Oh, thank you.
So everybody wins.
Yeah. I'm going to check it off twice.
Yes. Double check.
And for the listening audience, GIMP is an image editing program very similar to Adobe Photoshop, but completely free. So check that out if you need to make graphics for anything. Mm-hmm. Getting into the interview portion of the show, Liz, what is your favorite color?
I really like red.
Is there a particular shade of red that you like most?
Probably like darker reds. So for example, just getting into fall, and I am a hack gardener. There's usually like 3 days a year where I pretend I'm going to be a really good gardener. And one of them is like when fall starts showing up. And then I go buy mums.
Oh.
But mums never die, so they're like perfect for hack gardeners. But there's this dark red mum. So if you go look at collections of mums or chrysanthemums, I think that's what they are. The dark red one, like that's the red I like.
Hmm.
It's like a good dark wine.
Like a maroon?
Yeah, but maroon sounds like school colors, you know? More like a merlot.
A merlot?
I guess.
Is that more towards crimson or maroon?
Crimson's a little orangey, I think. And maroon, I would say, is a little more purple. Hmm. So maybe right in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. Like halfway to crimson, halfway to maroon.
It's a nice red.
Yeah, it's a good red.
If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
Great. I am a big animal lover, so I've thought about this a lot. I think I would choose some sort of wild cat.
Hmm.
So not like a tiger, not something really predictable, but maybe like a lynx.
Lynx?
Yeah. I think they're sweet because they're...
They got those ears.
Yeah, they have adorable ears, but they're very agile and they're kind of sneaky.
Hmm.
They're hard to find. So... I think I like that. They're good at stuff, but not super predictable.
Yeah.
I choose lynx.
Good choice.
Thank you. Plus, I'd be Liz the lynx, and alliteration is always a good choice.
If you spoke French, you'd be Liz Le Lynx.
Liz for the triple Le Lynx. Did you learn French or speak French?
Un petit peu. I took French for 4 years in high school.
All right, nice. I took a couple years.
A long time ago.
I'm really good at saying I only know a little French, but I'm so good at saying it that it makes it sound like I probably know more.
Je sais un petit peu de français.
Oui, je parle un très petit peu de français.
Oh, vraiment.
Zut. Alors. I'm out. That's all I got.
That's all you need.
Exactly.
What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
I think the first thing that pops to my mind is being a little kid. And I was pretty precocious and, I don't know, outgoing, one might say. So I remember my dad like teaching me little jokes and then saying them to his friends, but I didn't really get them at the time. Like, I didn't understand the punchlines. So they'd be like something political or something, some double entendre that, you know, a six-year-old doesn't understand. But so that's kind of my first memory of like my personal experience with comedy, which was, hey, I kind of like making people laugh. That's fun. I'm trying to remember what my first experience like enjoying other comedy would be. I think probably doing improv in high school. I auditioned for improv troupe in high school and I didn't really know what improv was. I was just like, a couple people said, I bet you'd like improv. So I auditioned not knowing what exactly improv was. And then that year I learned and it was great.
Nice. How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
Yeah.
Publicly.
Well, so that year in high school would have been my first bout, but I just did 1 year of it. And then that was it for a long time. So got back into it in my, I guess when I was like 26 or so, just kind of working a boring job and missing being creative and Googling lots of creative outlet kind of things. I took a class at Kendall and pottery throwing and stuff like that.
Throwing? Like
wheel.
Oh, that's...
You call it like throwing?
Like from the film Ghost?
Yeah, but you know, Patrick Swayze wasn't there, so... No, not Patrick. Is it Patrick Swayze?
I think so.
I think it is.
Or Val Kilmer. I get those two mixed up a lot.
He might have been the murderer. I feel like he's kind of murdery.
Oh.
I don't know. So yes, similar, but
the term is
not like contextually similar.
Right.
Art form similar. But one of the things I stumbled across was adult improv at Civic Theater.
So ah.
I jumped into beginner improv class there, and it happened to be right around the time when Civic was getting started on rapid delivery improv. So I sort of magically timed that perfectly and joined in the first round of that, which was great.
It's a good segue into the next. It's not really a question, and people have been confused about the phrasing, but let's talk about rapid delivery improv, meaning please talk about, but I like the way let's talk about sounds better.
Yeah, like we're both gonna talk about it.
I might a little bit, but you're doing the heavy lifting
here. All right.
Oops, sorry.
Chair noises.
I gotta plug my phone in.
It happens. I'll just dive in. So, yeah, rapid delivery was sort of this magical happy accident that I stumbled across, again, in my time of, like, mid-20s boredom, having this crisis of, oh, no, is being an adult just, like, never doing anything new? That sounds terrible. I don't want to do that. So jumped into that class, and then that turned into rapid delivery, and I met some of my favorite people in the comedy scene there. So I'm my best friend, Amy. And it was just, I went from like 0 to 60 of, I miss being creative to, oh, okay. Like 9 months later, I'm performing in front of people and making stuff up on a stage. And it was, I don't know. We had a couple years where it was sort of this magical little group of people so excited to play and make things up and sort of, I don't know, shirk off adulthood with abandon and jump down whatever crazy rabbit hole we happened to come up with. So it was like my gateway drug to comedy, really. Yeah, it was beautiful. It's on a little bit of a hiatus right now. We had a good few years run, and then we'd been performing at Dog Story lately, which is an excellent venue, but there's a lot of improv going on at Dog Story. And our first round of shows was at Sanchez downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like the dream scenario. So we had like this tiny little stage in the corner that we'd all complain about it being too small, but secretly we loved it. Like, it just forced us to be very intimate and creative with our space work, and it was fun. And then Sanchez food and drinks, which are fantastic. So audience members hung out, got food and drinks while they laughed at shows in this really awesome setting. The ambiance was great, and yeah, it was lovely. But they changed up their model of how their restaurant runs, so they weren't doing like the kind of gigs we were doing anymore. So we got kicked out. They just sort of stopped doing that stuff. So we were out on the streets and we landed at Dog Story, which was really great for a season. But wasn't the perfect venue for the kind of sort of short form improv and the environment we were wanting. So RDI is on a little bit of a break. It also, doing RDI got me into teaching at Civic. So I teach improv at Civic. So over the next year, I think kind of one of the goals is building up the reservoir of people who want to perform and have taken some classes, had some training, into kind of a, I don't know, next generation. RDI, the next generation, will be like Degrassi. Did you ever watch Degrassi?
Canadian soap opera kids
TV show.
Because Kara Williams talked about it extensively.
Yes, she would have.
On her episode.
Yes.
So I feel like I've experienced.
Yeah. If you've talked to Kara about it, you've as well as watched it. So we'll be the next generation. Ah. It'll come back.
I understand the context of that reference.
Yes. Well done. Thanks, Kara. Thanks for Kara. Keeping us all in the know.
Let's talk about No Outlet Improv Troupe.
Yeah. I was a member of No Outlet for about 5 hot minutes. I love them and they are great. And I don't even remember the entire context around it. I know a handful of the people who are No Outlet regulars. So like, you know, Aaron Becca and Katie Fahey at the time, just through the comedy scene, and I sort of joined in with them, and then my schedule was just awful, and I had said yes to them at a time where it meant that I would like every day of the week be at something comedy related, which isn't terrible, except, you know, I'm married and I have a job and like sometimes I should probably be home or hang out with my husband, who's really great. So I joined No Outlet and super fun. I loved them. They're so just creative and interested in trying new things, and the way they make up games and are always like, what if we just throw this weird curveball in and everyone rolls with it? So that was super fun. I just didn't really have a ton of space for it. I was really proud of the bio I wrote to be a part of No Outlet. It's basically the plot of Mulan.
Ah.
So that was exciting, but that's probably the best thing I contributed to No Outlet. So yeah, I was in the ranks for a minute and now I love them from the audience.
Me too.
Yeah. It's a good place to be.
Yeah. Let's talk about Salt.
Ooh. I feel like we should, because I found out on Amy's episode of the Grand Cast that Salt broke up. Which, I mean, they did. Kind of. They didn't really break up. We sort of faded away. Salt was the first adventure into long form that I had, really. I think Amy had pinged a bunch of Rapid Delivery members for, I think it was for the Grand Rapids Improv Festival. Or something. I think it was Griff. To just say, hey, is anyone interested in doing some long form for this festival? And a handful of us said yes, and it happened to be the people who formed Salt. And it was great. It was a ton of fun. I didn't know a lot about long form, and playing around with it was hilarious because I tend to be a very concrete thinker and long form can be so abstract. So I love comedy for that. It like forces my brain to work in really weird ways and that's fun. So Salt was just a weird group of people. We had a ton of fun being goofy and out of the box. We sort of invented our own, not our own form really, but we would do Wikipedia games. I don't know if you ever saw us do that. Yeah, so we'd base our improv off a random Wikipedia article, which just was really fun. Just to kind of prove that, like, I don't know, the joke that, have you ever played the game where you get something, like you have to start at one page on Wikipedia and you somehow have to get to another one by clicking through links in the pages? Like, you'll start on, like, eggplant and you have to end on, like, Queen Elizabeth I or something and you have to figure out how to click through all of them to, you know, like there's so many links within a Wikipedia page. So that was kind of the joke that like everything's connected and everything can be art. And so, yeah.
That's nice.
It was really fun. I loved that. I think that's the thing that we did that I'm most proud of. It was a very creative way to start improv scenes. And it was super fun.
and challenging.
Yes. Oh man. Sometimes we got like, I don't, you get a lot of geography things, like some crazy name, which is like a county in northern Scandinavian something. And it'll just say like there are X number of people. And at one point they had a post office, and it'll be like five sentences about it. But I don't know. Some of those are actually more fun than the big crazy long articles. But yeah, it was super fun.
Let's talk about funny girls.
Let's do it. Funny girls. I was in kind of the first round of funny girls becoming a thing. So again, shout outs again to Aaron Becca and Katie Fahey. Doing a bunch of planning for a Grand Rapids Improv Festival and noticing a severe lack of ladies. And then having the brains to recognize that there are actually lots of really funny ladies in Grand Rapids and perhaps they should all get together and perform, which was just a great idea. So I was part of that first round of, Funny Girls really just started as improv for GRIFF, Grand Rapids Improv Festival. And it was a ton of fun. We read our old journal entries and just did some long form off of it. And it was hilarious. And there was sort of this instant camaraderie of, I don't know what it felt like to just perform with all women. And there was a great energy about it. And we got done with GRIFF and pretty much everyone was like, yeah, I could do more of that. We don't have to be done. You want to keep going? Should we do some more? And then it evolved into sketch and stand up. And I think it was really Aaron and Katie just kind of, they really had their thumbs on the pulse of comedy and just sort of art in Grand Rapids. So tapping some people who haven't maybe formally involved in the improv world, and it just sort of branched into all of these forms of comedy. So art and writing and poetry and singing, and I was going to say dancing, but I don't know if we've really done any dancing. But yeah, it was just a really fun time. I think, comedy has been male dominated a lot. And I think that's fine if there's going to be a strong male presence, but I think there should just also be a strong female presence and co-ed presence. You know, I just think different things come out of those different groups and they should just all get to be represented. So I'm very proud of Funny Girls. I haven't been performing with them really against schedule wise for the last, I don't know, probably a year, I guess. But I love the work they're doing, and they are creative and powerhouse group of women, really. They get stuff done. And they're just constantly churning out new material, which I think is insanely impressive. Similar to committing to doing a new podcast every week. It's just a lot to sign up for, and I think they sign up for a lot as well, and they deliver on it.
Yeah, I think it helps when you don't know what you're signing up for when you sign up for it.
Yeah, amen. Just say yes, and that's improv, right? Yes and, sure. We'll just see what happens.
I'll do that for a year.
Sure, why not?
Oh. But it's great. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've made it pretty far so far.
Yeah, this will be episode 34 nice. Of 48.
So. All right. Wait, of 48, why not of 52?
I'm doing four seasons of 12 episodes.
Okay. So that's pretty... Do you take like one week off or something between seasons?
Yeah, I figure shit happens.
Yeah.
And that's...
That's kind to yourself, really. Yeah.
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 You got to have a little bit of leeway in there.
Yes, margin is healthy. I support that.
Let's talk about... GRIFF 2017.
Yay! I'm doing like nothing for GRIFF this year, which is the first time in a few years. So I plan on just attending and being an enthusiast, which I'm pretty pumped about.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I was heavy into the performance side of things. Like there was a GRIFF where I had performances. I had like 9 performances in 6 days or something. And wow. It was a ton of fun, but I'm really excited to sit on the other side of things this year. Yeah, I love that we do an improv festival. Like, I'm proud of Grand Rapids and the no outlet people who are just making that happen every year. It's really impressive. And I've met a handful of people from outside of Grand Rapids doing GRIFF who are great. So yeah, I'm pumped. It'll be a good year. There's been a lot of growth in the improv community in the last couple of years, and I think Griff's a really fun chance to highlight some of the quality we have within our comedy scene and get to meet and hang out with some people from other comedy scenes.
Yeah. You don't get like touring improv groups in Grand Rapids too often, so
yeah.
Seeing that outside influence is exciting.
Yeah.
For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
Improv. For sure, improv. I haven't seen a lot of stand-up, and most of what I've seen has been awful. Hmm. And I'm not saying stand-up is awful. I think I have just done a stellar job at choosing the worst stand-up to go to. So other than, I've seen quite a bit of Funny Girls stand-up, and I do enjoy a lot of what comes out of Funny Girls. I think it's really smart stand-up. I think most of the stand-up I've ended up going to just ends up being, like, stupid dick jokes. Can we say that?
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, cool.
Dick jokes and poop jokes.
Oh, my gosh. Like, there's more to life than bathroom humor and sex jokes. You know? Just, yeah. I remember watching a stand-up guy just bomb on stage, and he just kept ordering shot after shot. It was and I get it. Like, if you're, I don't totally get it because I don't do stand-up, but, you know, like, if you're touring, like, you try out new material somewhere, and Grand Rapids isn't, like, you know, the highlight of your tour, probably, so maybe you try some new stuff out. Maybe it bombs. Like, that's from what I've heard and from what I've talked with friends who do stand-up. Like, you got to be okay with having some sets that really tank because it's how you learn what works and what doesn't work. And people have a lot less grace for you than they do in improv. It's an improv, they're like, well, they were just making that up. So, you know, they'll get back. Whereas with stand-up, you're like, no, I wrote this. I did that on purpose. I'm very sorry. Except the stand-ups I've seen were not sorry about the terrible, terrible things they were saying. And yeah. And sketch, I think, is really fun as well. I just find myself much more interested in the surprise that is improv and very compelled by what's going to happen next. And I love watching a good improv performance where they really find a game in something and just the genius behind finding a game and then bringing it back in a ton of different ways that you never would have expected. I feel like improv is like the highlight of how different every single brain is. And when a group of people are on board with, I'm going to go with whatever you throw out there, it just gives people freedom to say like, oh yeah, my brain's got some weird stuff, but it's going to be fun. So yeah, for sure, improv.
Are you comfortable with silence?
I don't know how long I have to wait to answer to prove that I am.
That was long enough.
Okay. I think I would like to be. Yeah. A couple of people I improvise with are slower improvisers. And even just in day-to-day life, they're slower answerers and like thinkers. And so conversations have more pause and I can be rambly and chatty, so I think a lot can come out of silence, so I would like to be okay with it.
I think that's a good attitude to have.
Yeah.
What are some of your all-time favorite comedic movies?
Ooh. That's a good question. I'm just totally blanking on movies. I like dramas and like period pieces when it comes to movies, which is nerdy, I guess. But the only thing I keep thinking of is Wedding Crashers, which I don't know. That's a good movie. Yeah, I think that like my late high school, early college years of like Wedding Crashers and Napoleon Dynamite and Anchorman and those kinds of things, they're just so ridiculous. So I love that. Yeah. I like a good, more dramatic movie that incorporates comedy, I think. You know, like, I almost appreciate in a movie, anyway, comic relief more than just a comedy. So thinking of, like, one of my all-time favorite movies is Stranger Than Fiction.
Oh, yeah, with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
I'd say that's it falls under comedic movies. Yeah,
but there's more drama in that, and it's it's really quirky storytelling. And
very well done.
Or like a Wes Anderson movie or something, you know, where it's like, it's quirky more than just funny. And yeah, so I love that.
Those count.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, then I choose those. All right. I choose Stranger Than Fiction.
What are some of your all-time favorite television shows?
Comedy or just overall?
Anything.
Cool. I really like TV shows. So some all-time favorites, like long-standing favorites would be Alias. I'm obsessed with Alias. It used to be on Netflix and it's not anymore, and that's good for me. but I think like the first few seasons of Alias, it's just it's such good storytelling.
That was like the first J.J. Abrams thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't think it was first. No, his Felicity.
He did Felicity also?
Didn't he do Felicity?
I don't know.
I think he did, because there's a handful of people in Alias who were also in Felicity, and he's got a thing for using the same actors a handful of times. Like the guy who played Weiss, who's like the friend detective on Alias. He's like friends with Vaughn. My nerd is showing about this. anyway, he was on Felicity. So I think Felicity was, I'm going to have to look this up now, but yeah. Yeah. So loved that show. Comedy wise, huge 30 Rock fan. I guess movies as well. Like I love Tina Fey. So like Baby Mama, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Love that. Yeah, so 30 Rock's probably my favorite. You know, of that, like 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, The Office, like I like all of those, but 30 Rock is my ultimate favorite. I love their level of silly. I very much enjoy recently Jane the Virgin. So I got really sick earlier this year and got into that show while I was sick. Just needed some Netflix binging. It is very funny.
Oh, it's on Netflix?
Yeah.
What's it about?
Well, I guess I can give away some because it's basically the premise of the show. Basically, so Jane, the virgin, Jane gets artificially inseminated on accident and she's a virgin. It's like the whole thing of it is it's making fun of telenovelas. So Jane is, I don't know what her background is, but it's a very diverse cast. And like in the show, like her grandmother is an illegal immigrant from, I can't remember what country. I want to say, I can't remember, somewhere in Central America. And there's a lot about like her family dynamic. And it's three generations of women in her family. There are no men. And so I love that female dynamic and then all the love stories, and they're so ridiculous. And there's a narrator to the show, like the way a telenovela would be. And he is amazing. And it's just like, it makes fun of itself all the time and is very aware of that it's making fun of itself. And just like the self-awareness of the show is really on point. I don't know how to describe it better than that, but it's funny. It was a shock to me. I just remember someone saying at one point, like, I like that show. And I was sick scrolling through Netflix. I saw it. I started it. And I was just thinking to myself, oh my word, how is everyone I know not watching this show? It is so good. And then I binged like all three available seasons in an embarrassing amount of time. It was very entertaining. Yeah. So I think those are, you know, I like a lot of TV shows, but I also love a good drama. So like Broadchurch, it's like a murder mystery drama. Mm. Another Netflix BBC.
BBC makes some really good stuff.
Oh my goodness. I love BBC.
You ever watch their nature documentaries? Like Planet Earth?
Planet Earth. Yeah.
The second one is just out recently.
I haven't watched it.
It's really good.
Ooh, I cry every time in the original Planet Earth when the polar bear dies. Ooh. And then the mating dances of the tropical birds are amazing and entertaining. And the little ducks jumping out of the trees. Yeah. I love that little David Attenborough in the background.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which streaming shows are you currently watching?
I just started Game of Thrones. Is that streaming show?
Yeah.
I'm watching it like now on demand.
Sure.
On Comcast. I don't know.
Oh.
Is that Is that not the way to do it?
I'll pretend you didn't say that.
Okay. I think I have HBO Go, but I don't know how to make it be on my TV.
Oh.
I could probably figure that out. It's probably not that hard.
No, you're still watching it. But yeah. Same difference.
That's like the current thing that I'm binging on. So I just finished season 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
You got a ways to go.
Oh, I got a ways to go. Yeah. A lot of
solid hours in entertainment right
yes.
there.
Yes. Yeah. I think I like it. I'm interested in what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
But I do take some issue with the like very rapey vibes of a lot of it. And maybe that's what life was. I don't know, but it's fantasy, so whatever. But yeah. I just sometimes it's over the top and the kind of, I don't know, glorification of violence towards women, especially, not super comfortable with all of it, I guess. So I have turmoil over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. Watching with a critical eye, but.
It's definitely not a conservative television show.
No, it is not. Yeah, I think that's, I'm constantly streaming The West Wing. That's just another favorite. So just at all times, I'm in some season of The West Wing. I just love it. Yeah.
What is comedy to you?
My comedy world is very improv influenced. I think like comedy at its best, I would say, is a sort of sneaky escapism that actually makes you think about something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when comedy is doing its best job, it's letting you laugh at something or during something that maybe you wouldn't have laughed at or whatever. But then it's also making you go, oh, yeah. Huh, that's kind of weird, or I hadn't thought about that way, or, ooh, should we be making fun of that? yeah. So I would say sneaky escapism with a dose of, what do you really think about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just silly. It's just good to just sometimes be ridiculous.
Just the fart jokes.
Yeah, need them. I mean, I never make them, but...
Never?
I don't really.
Oh, you're missing out.
I don't know. I mean, if someone does one in a scene, I'll go with it because yes and whatever. But yeah, never one for bathroom humor.
Mm.
You won't see That's me initiating universal. The burps and or farts in a scene.
I'm not sure about this next question if it's appropriate to ask, but.
Oh, dear.
So feel free to decline. But have you settled your feud with the McCoy family?
Ha! I love that. I'm very unaware of the details around the Hatfield-McCoy situation, but I am, so my husband Troy, he is, like, that is his family. Like, they are the Hatfields, so direct descendants.
Oh.
Yeah. So his dad is all into the genealogy, and people always joke, you know, give him my credit card or whatever. And like, oh, Hatfields, seen any McCoys lately? And, I mean, everyone loves that joke, and I usually just say, like, yeah, that's my family. That's where it's the real Hatfields. Except, you know what people say? The real McCoy.
Oh.
I'm going to start saying the real Hatfield.
You should.
I will. Yeah. So, no. I haven't seen any McCoys lately.
Hmm.
On a funny, though, Hatfield tangent. Do you like tangents on your...
I do.
Great.
I also like cosines and sines.
Oh. Well done. Math jokes. Hooray, pre-calc. So, I worked somewhere once, and so my email address is, like, my name at Gmail. But then a lot of times at work, it would be like L. Hatfield at something. And I used to have to sign up for these trade shows for a job. And you have to like fill the form out super fast. And my autopilot fingers would fill in, I would do lhatfield@gmail.com, which is not my email, nor is it my work email. So there's this guy, I feel like I shouldn't say this to the public, but named Lance. And I don't know where he lives, but that's his email address. And so I would sign up for things on accident under his name all the time. And he would just forward me stuff at my work email and be like, hey, Liz, it's Lance. She got this thing. So, hey, fellow Hatfield. And I don't know. We're probably now by marriage related in some distant form, but it's my friend Lance. He was very helpful. One time he forwarded me a picture of like a baby someone sent him. Because I guess he gets it a lot with other Hatfields whose first names start with L. And he was like, this is a cute baby, but I'm not the uncle. And I was like, oh, that one's not for me. I don't know that baby either. Sorry. Sorry, Lance. Cute baby, though.
Huh.
Yeah. There you go.
What does it mean to be a comedian?
Ooh. I'll just answer really subjectively. So I think for me being a comedian means willing to look at something from a lot of different perspectives. And willing to accept or at least entertain multiple thoughts about something or yeah, I think comedy at its heart is just very curious. So being willing to be curious about just about anything, I think is what a comedian. And then coming up with what's a new way to talk about it. Thinking about people like Jerry Seinfeld or like Louis C.K., a lot of their humor is based on like very normal day-to-day things. They've just taken the time to think about it and like put it in a slightly new angle, and people love that about them. Like, love thinking about, like, oh, I've been to the airport too. I love this. This is about me.
Food is weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're gonna get what's his name? He does all the food jokes. I can picture him. I can't remember. I'll come up with it later. But yeah, I think that's the beauty of it. Like, a comedian just sees things from a lot of angles and is willing to figure it out and do the work of communicating it in new ways.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to the new Seinfeld special on Netflix this month? Next month? Soon?
So, true confessions over here. I also just started watching Seinfeld for the first time.
Oh.
So I'm in season 3, maybe?
Yeah, I would prioritize that.
Yes, I will prioritize it. It will be my priority. Yeah, I just felt like I couldn't admit that I do anything comedy related anymore and say to one more person, I haven't really watched Seinfeld. Couldn't do it. Just felt shame, you know?
So you probably haven't watched Curb Your Enthusiasm either.
No, I don't think I have.
That's from Larry David, the co-creator of Seinfeld.
Okay.
And it's semi-improvised, and
yeah, I know the name. I just am now realizing, like, I don't think I've ever seen it or know what's on it.
It's kind of like a more refined version of Seinfeld, I guess.
Okay.
It's a sitcom about Larry David, who the character of George is based on.
Right, yes.
And his...
I've watched some, like, old from when Seinfeld just came out special kind of things about Seinfeld, so... Trying not to get too far ahead of myself, though.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well,
I'm
you have
regularly
that to look forward to after Seinfeld. It's like 8 seasons right now, I think, and then the 9th season of Curb is coming out this fall.
Like, it's still going.
Yeah. Nice. Well, yeah, this is the first season in 5 years, I think. They've been on a pretty long break.
Cool. But stretching it out.
The 7th season of Curb, I think it was like a Seinfeld reunion episode.
Okay.
Kind of like they made a new episode that you kind of got to see.
Nice.
So,
all right. Give me some time and I'll catch up.
All right.
I'm only, you know, 20 years behind on TV. Yeah. I'm not usually very caught up on current television entertainment.
Well, it's nice to let things pass through the filter of time so that you don't have to waste time watching all the mediocre shows that don't
sure
hold up.
There are a lot of those.
There are a lot of those.
I think I had to give myself permission to stop feeling the pressure to be caught up with every current thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I say that like I worked really hard for a long time to know everything. I didn't. I just, at a point, felt okay about that. And I think with any creative art especially, there's this like weird thinking that like, well, you should know what everyone before you did.
Mm.
But in essence, like a lot of the best creative work is like, I did a new thing. So if you fill your brain with a bunch of stuff other people did, you know, maybe for some people that's super inspirational. And I think sometimes for me it is. It's good to see some work other people have done. But like, you could literally spend all your time trying to see and learn and understand and process and think about and talk about stuff everyone else did. Or you could just kind of let yourself be influenced by the things you find and like and then make your own stuff.
Yeah. What is the best gift that you have ever received?
Let me think about that. My husband Troy is a really good gift giver. So one of my favorite things he got me was a set of Jane Austen novels from like the 1930s or 40s. So it's like a full set of novels and they're beautiful. The covers are gorgeous. They're like patterned and lovely. And so that's one of my favorite things someone ever got me. Yeah.
What is the best gift that you have ever given?
Ooh.
In your opinion.
In my, yeah, that's very like, well, let me tell you about how awesome I am. I would say 1 year for Troy's birthday, we were going to be in England, and we're both pretty big Anglophiles. One of our best friends lives over there, so we try to go every year, stay with our friends, hang out. Ton of fun. So 1 year we were in Europe for his birthday, and so I did some conspiring with our friends over there to just plan like a bunch of fun birthday things for him. So one was getting to go to a Reading football match, soccer, which super fun. Get to go to, like, I think it's EPL. I don't really follow sports, but to go to an EPL game. And then bought his favorite band, Elbow, had released this limited edition beer. So they made a beer. Mm. So got him like a 4-pack of that. And then we got tickets to, he's a big Woody Allen fan, in this like weird theater in Reading, England, where our friends live, showing Midnight in Paris at this weird theater. So we showed up in England and I had this like pile of things that are all like his favorite things. And then also it was, I think, the year after we got married. And when we were moving, he had this favorite coffee mug that says, "I love Reading," but Reading is spelled reading, and he also loves reading, and he broke it while we were moving.
Oh.
So I had contacted our friends, and we had a new "I love Reading" mug right when he got there. So that was like the most elaborate gift I've ever given someone either, so I'd say probably that one.
Yeah. It was very thoughtful.
Yes, it was a smattering of gifts.
Who are some of your role models?
Ooh. Amy Gaskin is certainly one of my role models. I think she regularly says yes to things that are just a little outside her reach and then makes them happen, which I love. So whether it's saying like, yeah, I'll put on a sketch show. So she goes out, she rents the space and she hires actors and she writes and is very professional. And even if she says yes to something that maybe she has like no business saying, you know, oh, I'll be the authority here. If she says she'll do it, like, she'll do it. So I think that's really impressive. And I look up to her for that. Some of my other role models. I like it's kind of a weird one, but Meister Eckhart. So it's like a theologian, mystical theologian.
Mm-hmm.
It's very poetic, and I don't know. Can that be a role model? I think he's dead. Pretty sure he's
sure.
Dead. Yeah, but just the way he like saw the world and thought about things, just like kind of beauty in all things, sort of thinking. Mm. I can be really skeptical, so. I think looking up to someone who finds kind of beauty, spirituality, like wholeness, value, and just about everything. Look up to that.
Sounds kind of Buddhist.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Me either.
And also, like, Tina Fey. I mean, I just love her. I think she's... Her recent appearance on the summer weekend updates SNL thing that they were doing, the little news, whatever, doing her whole sheet-caking thing, and the amount of people that were like, oh, man, you're saying we should just eat cake? You're not really addressing the problem. And I was like, oh, it's not what she's saying. Like, it's not what comedy is. Like, there's so many layers to it. But, yeah, I love her. I think she's fantastic. And you just, like, never hear a bad thing about her. And her book, Bossy Pants. Just, ugh, she's beautiful. Yeah. Comedy role model for sure.
Let's talk about performing in theater productions.
Oh.
I don't know how it's pronounced.
Theatrical?
Theatrical Théâtre. Productions?
Théâtre. Théâtre. We'll be French again.
Oui.
Oui, oui.
We are.
we are talking about this. like stage, like scripted theater, whatever.
Like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
That's
maybe
the only one I've ever done. Yeah, so just recently played Guildenstern in Heritage Theater's production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which was an immensely good time. Also extremely challenging. I have loved theater and performing for my whole life and went through a solid... let's see, if I was like 26 when I started doing RDI, probably like 16, 17 years where I let the fear of like, oh, maybe I'll audition and everyone's going to laugh at me, keep me from actually trying to do anything.
Yeah.
So doing improv kind of opened that door for me of like, no, I can do it and I want to. And actually the people, especially as an adult, who are saying yes to those communities, like they're more excited about other people saying yes to trying something than they are interested in laughing at you if you don't do well. So got over that, which is great. So for the last couple of years, I'd auditioned for a handful of shows here and there, and RNG, as we affectionately call it, since the name Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead is very long. RNG was when I auditioned for and got one of the leads. And man, that was a new world. It was a huge part. A lot of memorization, which I underestimated. And so we had 2 weeks of performances. Second weekend, I had this moment at the end of one of the acts where I said to one of the other people in the production, like, I don't remember getting to the end. I don't know what happened. And they were like, yeah, that's it. That's theater. Like, you get so caught up in it. And I realized I had had a handful of nights because there's a lot of comedy in the show. I'm so used to being tuned into the audience and what they're reacting to and, like, finding the game of an improv scene based partly on what is the room following as well as what are my fellow actors following. You know, like, who's leading who is a little more nebulous in improv. And so, you know, putting up a show every night where we already know what we're going to say, we already know what we're going to do, where we're going to stand, like this leads to this, leads to this. And then I say this, and this usually gets a laugh, but some nights it doesn't. So I found myself getting in my head about that, like, oh man, people aren't laughing right there. And usually they laugh right there. Like, but I don't have the tools available to me that I usually have in improv of like, okay, well, I can figure this audience out. I can pivot. I can do something else. Like, I can't do something else. I tell the same story again that we're telling. So I think in the second week, I realized what we're doing on stage. I mean, the audience is a big part of it, and there's the energy they bring, and like, there's something about putting it on in front of people that just gives it a different life and a different motivation, I guess. But I had to kind of stop waiting for audience reactions and really embody the character I was being at a deeper level. And you know, Guildenstern some nights couldn't be jokier than other nights, you know, like I couldn't change who I was just to get another laugh. And so our second weekend of shows, I had that much more in my head of I'm going to look to my fellow actors on stage for my energy and my motivation and my connection and my drive. And it ended up being a completely different animal. And I'll be excited to – I haven't done any improv since then. So I'll be really excited to get on stage again with some improv and see or feel how that's maybe changed me a little bit.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about pets.
Hmm. I love pets. I have two pets. They're cats, both of them. We call them the Catfields. So I have Thor Catfield, Thor Cat of Thunder, and Chester, Winchester Catfield. So Thor, I've had for about 6 years. He's a little black cat. He's sassy and kind of a butthead. And then Chester, little white cat with some brown spots, is just the freakishly nicest cat in the world. I know a lot of people say they have the nicest cat in the world, but they don't. Like, literally, Chester is the nicest cat in the world. He loves everybody. He will follow around. Like we had the Roto-Rooter guy out a few weeks ago because the drain in our basement was blocked up. So he's making, like, all this noise with the Roto-Rooter, like, classic cats hate him kind of guy. And my cat, Chester, is just, like, following him around. Like, hey, do you want to pet me? I love you. And then Thor is the opposite. They both love me, but he's a little more hesitant of strangers. So they're like the opposite of each other. So we have white cat, black cat, or nice cat, mean cat, fast cat, slow cat. We call Thor fast cat because he's like zippy and jumpy and whatever. And Chester is like ridiculously slow. Like when he's walking across you, he'll just like step and then step and like stop to look around. And we're like, where are you trying to go, cat? Just keep going. Keep walking. So, yeah, those are my pets. I like them.
Are you just a cat person or do you like dogs also?
I also like dogs. I like all animals. Yeah. So I think we have cats. They're just a little more low maintenance, take care of themselves a little bit better, don't need walking. And, you know, between working full time and doing different performance things and whatever, I would never want a dog that I couldn't give it the time it deserves. I get very frustrated with people like who have animals or pets or like have animals that shouldn't be pets and, don't like, I love animals and I want all of them at my house, but I also recognize that like, no, I shouldn't have a red panda. Red pandas don't belong in houses. Though I would love to have one. So I would love a dog, but not until I felt confident I could give it the time and energy and running around. The kind of dog I want is called a silken windhound. And they're
a what?
A silken windhound. They're real divisive. I showed my father-in-law and he laughed out loud in my face.
What? Yeah,
which is kind of what some people do. So
why?
They're kind of funny looking. They're like shaggy greyhounds. It's kind of what they look like. So they've got like little narrow foxy faces.
I gotta look this up.
Yeah.
Silken wind hound.
Mm-hmm. I think they're really beautiful and kind of interesting and quirky looking. Sort of look like something that would show up in like a 19th century painting of British hunters out hunting foxes, which is a terrible sport, by the way, and a classic example of animal treatment that I am not a fan of. But
those are funny looking.
No, they're beautiful.
They're beautiful in a unique way.
Yeah, they're kind of like foxy and whatever. They've got pretty chill temperaments, but they're also like a little, you got to win them over. I kind of like that about them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
Ooh, I love food. I think the Greenwell is one of our go-to favorites, and I'm a huge fan of, I think it's the Brazilian black bean stew.
Mm.
So it's like black beans and rice, and I don't know if it's like pork belly or something. It's delicious. Oh, I could eat it all the time. I love ordering off like specials menus at restaurants with a good kitchen. It's fun to jump into whatever their chef currently says they're excited about. So yeah, Greenwell's probably one of my favorites. I'm a big sushi fan, and we love Tokyo Grill, which is over by Horrocks.
Yeah, on 44th Street.
Yeah, and Breton?
I think it's
Breton and 44th.
Yeah.
Yeah. So love that. I would say, especially price-wise, like everyone loves Maru, and I think their sushi is good. But I actually think Tokyo Grill sushi is better, and the pricing is a little bit better. I'll never say no to a Yesterdog. Yeah, that's up there. I really love food. I'm up for just about anything.
Have you been to Grove?
Yes. Yeah, I actually, not in the last year or two, though. So they used to do, I think they still do some sort of, like, courses menu.
Yeah,
they've
three courses.
Changed it.
I think it's $40 or $45 now.
It used to be, like, $36 or $38 or something.
I think it started at $30 when that was years and years ago.
Yeah, like, I think we went 2 years ago for some celebration something. And
it's kind of a special
it's go-to place. It's fun to go splurge. We're big fans of, like, if you're celebrating something. Like, I'd rather go to a great restaurant or something than, like, get a gift.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of, we love going to Chicago, like, for shows and stuff. So I love going to Chicago and trying a new restaurant and going to a show and whatever. I have family over there, so stay with them, make a weekend. But yeah, I think Grove's menu, I haven't been as excited about it the last few times I've gone. I feel like it's gotten more expensive, but also less good. I don't think the chefery is worse.
The chef left like a year ago to open his own place, a little over a year ago, to open his own place, the Lazy Susan in Standale.
Oh, that should be what happened.
It closed recently.
Oh, no. Come back.
Yeah.
Come back to Grove. Or start your own thing here. I'm dying for a good French restaurant in Grand Rapids. We don't have one. There's one set to open downtown somewhere. I don't remember where, but I love French food. Oui, oui.
Well, Vivant's close. Belgian. It's like half French.
Yeah. I like Vivant. I'm not usually as excited about their menu. I think their beers are great. They're my favorite craft beer in Grand Rapids.
Sometimes they'll have really good specials.
Yeah. Their burger is really good.
Burger's very good. Mm-hmm. I had a venison sandwich there that was very good. Don't see those.
Yeah, they do some weird
everywhere.
Stuff.
No duck a l'orange, though.
No. They do duck nachos, which apparently are amazing, but I haven't been that wowed by them.
They're nachos. They're good nachos.
Yeah, I guess. I'm a big Terra fan, too.
Ah.
I like Terra. Their brunch. That is my favorite brunch. I love food. Now I'm hungry.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
I think my favorite thing, especially since what I usually do is improv, would be the magic that happens when group mind takes over. There's just like nothing more fun than being on stage with a handful of people who are all in on whatever happens and just sort of embracing the who knows what's next-ness of performing with a couple different people and people who are aware and like picking up the signals you're putting down and adding to it, and everyone's jumping on and there's lots of yes anding going on, and it just goes somewhere no one could predict because everyone's brain is real different. So yeah, that's my favorite, on stage when the group mind just takes over and you're like, oh man, here we go, everyone buckle up.
And what is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
I think I mentioned a little earlier, but I love seeing a good improv performance that finds a good game in a scene. So by way of example, I remember watching Improvised Shakespeare in Chicago, and someone mispronounced a country. I don't remember what one, but they like dropped an L. And whenever the characters who were in that country that they mentioned talked, they dropped all their L's. And just that sort of thing of just like, oh, it's genius. And so I love a good game in an improv show. Just something, especially in improv, like when I've been teaching, I tell my students all the time, like, give up on caring about making mistakes, because honestly, some of the best improv moments come out of someone like stumbling over a word or forgetting something or whatever, like your team will have your back and they're going to turn it into something amazing. And everyone's going to be like, I'm so glad you said that word wrong. Or I'm so glad you forgot my name in that scene. You know, I mean, it's not an excuse to not pay attention, but like if you're being an intentional improviser and you mess a thing up here or there, like it's actually, that's where a lot of the magic happens.
And the final question of the interview portion of the show, if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Ooh. There is no one right answer to just about anything. I would also tell that to my 10-year-old self and my 20-year-old self and, like, my 25-year-old self. I think the right answer is often just saying yes to something and going for it, and it's okay to course correct later. So, yeah.
Thank you. That. And I've been trying to get a musical transition into the break setup, but I haven't had the time to do that yet. Yay. So if you could please do some sort of performance, musical or otherwise,
gladly,
to take us into the break, and then ring the bell once you're done, please.
Great. Okay, 10 points to anyone who gets the reference. Do, 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 do.